is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, busy time of year for sure with everything going on. And we have located Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association to get a kind of more in-depth update on the Archie Creek fire. Kyle, how are things going out there?
Yeah, so things are still looking pretty good out here. Conditions have still been pretty favorable for us. Just going around the fire real quick to give you guys an idea how things are looking. That glide area is still holding strong from glide all the way up towards the non-Parel area. Up through the South Fork of Kalapuya Creek. There's still some pockets in there of indirect line that we're working to either cut off or slowly let that fire advance to the main containment line, but things are looking really good up there. Going across the north end of the fire, there from the Kalapuya area over towards the upper end of Rock Creek, we've got lines through part of that, still looking for opportunities to cut off that more of that northeastern part of the fire. And then the plan is to work down into the Scared Man area and Canton Creek area. Some of that's some really nasty country in there, very broken topography, trying to find a spot where we can, engage on that, both for safety reasons, but also for an area that line's going to hold if the weather does end up changing again. And then when we get down to the kind of the southeast corner of the fire, we've got an area down there towards Panther Creek that there's roads prepped. Again, that fire hasn't been overly active again today down there, just kind of slowly backing down the hillside. That's the plan, is to hold that there. The biggest concern for homes is there in the Little River area. We're still working to get some containment lines established there, both primary and secondary, to keep those homes protected. There's still a large structure protection task force out there from various fire departments throughout Douglas County and representatives from the State Fire Marshal's Office working with the fire team and the wildland side of things to make sure that those are protected. But so far, things have looked in pretty good in that area as well.
We've got a large amount of people working on this fire, and it's what, between 700 and 800. It's amazing.
Yeah, so yeah, we've come a long ways from where we started. Resources and people have been scarce this year with the number of fires and everything else going on. So we were very fortunate in the last couple of days to get some National Guard personnel in here. I think it was two nights ago, they rolled into town, and then yesterday was their first day out on the line. So we've got them engaged now, securing some of those control lines on the around the fire, and then working, or especially down around the glide community, mopping up hot spots that are still close to homes, because that's the last thing we want in some of those areas with kind of the dirty burn, is to have something flare back up and threaten another home. So we've got those people engaged doing good things. With those numbers going up, it does raise the complexity of the incident and just the logistical side of things, trying to support that on a normal year, let alone with the COVID restrictions and everything else that we're facing. So we're actually bringing in what's known as a Type 1 incident management team, which will transition out here in a couple days with the current team. And they come with a little bit more staff, a little bit more expertise, and they're typically used on the more complex fires. So we were lucky enough to get one of those in to fill in some of the gaps that we've been missing currently.
And one of the elements about that, when you mentioned the COVID restrictions and doing things differently, talk about the changes this year versus what we would normally see in a large fire camp, normally just east of Glide.
Yeah, so, a normal fire year, you'd have basically a small city that would be formed in a field somewhere. So when you think back to some of the fires we've had up there in the past with Cable Crossing or the Umpqua North Fire up that way, or even Stouts Creek or any of the other fires we've had in our district here, basically there's a field that's taken over, or a school district or whatever, and there's a tent city that's established, and there's a kitchen and an eating area, and everybody kind of congregates in the same area. You know, with the COVID restrictions, you know, that's not something that's possible this year. So rather than having one large fire camp, as convenient as it is for a number of different reasons, we've had to spike people out in different areas. So we've got, you know, a spike camp set up out in the glide area. There's a spike camp up on the north end of the fire, and there's people here at the fairgrounds as well. So we've got people spread out. You know, the food situation is different. So instead of standing in line and getting your plate that, you know, that's been touched by however many people to get down to you, and now it's all prepackaged. It's boxed, and you just grab your box and go. And so the whole thing, you know, while we're achieving the same outcome, it's slightly different this year.
Now, one of the elements too about that, and I've been a number of these, obviously, is the shower facilities. Are you able to do that at each one of these smaller camps?
Yeah, so you know, that's one of the that's important for a number of different reasons besides, you know, just COVID and hygiene and everything else. But one of the big things that we run into here in Western Oregon is poison oak, and we want to make sure that our firefighters are having those opportunities to get their laundry done and shower and all that stuff, just because, you know, again, with that poison oak issue, we don't want to have that stuff pop up. So that's been a key thing we've stressed this whole time, is making sure people have proper hygiene and the ability to do that.
Wow. So a lot of changes there. So does it, on the food side, does that mean no hot food then?
So there, the lunches are still bag lunches like we've had in the past. You know, the food, there is hot meals, and they basically it's packaged up and stuffed in coolers to stay warm. And then, you know, depending on when you get to those is how warm the food is. So sometimes it's warmer than others.
Wow. What are some of the other changes that are different this year because of the COVID-19 situation?
Well, you know, obviously there's just the whole mask wearing, and, you know, there's hand sanitizer and wipes and everything else everywhere. You know, again, most of the functions of the fire team are still in place. The biggest thing is, again, it's those spike camps. Some of the people are working virtually this year. So a couple of the people, for example, on the information team has been other places. So that way there's not as many bodies here. We've had people in finance and some of those opportunities that you can do from afar. They've been utilizing the technology and, you know, not taking the risk of bringing too many people into one area. So that's probably been another big difference than what we've seen in previous years.
So I don't know how much opportunity you've had to get into different areas, but I'm curious about how things, because you know this area very well, about how things look different out there with the level of devastation that we've had versus, you know, areas that you're familiar with or areas that you saw when this was beginning on last Tuesday.
Yeah, so probably the hardest hit area is going to be that corridor, Highway 138. You know, it's a landmark destination that people come for a number of different reasons, whether it's fishing or rafting or boating or just camping or whatever. You know, that corridor took a beating in places. It's going to look completely different when people get back in there to see that. You know, another thing we've been getting a lot of questions on are some of the recreation sites up there with the trailheads, and you've got the North Umpqua Trail, and you've got the campgrounds and all that stuff. And, you know, a lot of that was pretty heavily damaged as well. They're getting some recreation staff back in there now to look at some of those sites and try and come up with a plan between the Forest Service and the BLM on their sites on what they're going to do going forward and what they have to do to, you know, get that process going. So that's probably been, you know, the biggest area that's for most people where they're going to see that devastation. But when you get into really the heart of this fire anywhere, the amount of fire activity and the intensity that it burnt was very high. So unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of loss in those areas with timber and stuff like that. So when you get out on the fringes where we're holding the fire now, things look a little bit better, but it's still going to be burnt and black and all that stuff.
109 homes destroyed in the fire. We've never had a loss this big, correct?
No, we haven't. You know, you have to go back, you know, on a large fire all the way back to 2004 to the Bland Mountain number 2 fire. And that one, you know, I'm just guessing offhand was 7 or 8 homes that were lost in that fire. Prior to that, and a large fire incident was back to 1987 with the original Bland Mountain fire. And that was, I don't know, 15 or 20 homes. So we have never seen anything like this from a fire situation here in Douglas County.
Wow. And I know that tomorrow, a lot of folks out in those areas are going to have the chance to go out there and survey things as well. Got pictures today. I'm working on a follow-up story for tomorrow about the Rock Creek Fish Hatchery, and have now seen pictures of some of the devastation there.
Yeah, so we've been working with the sheriff's office, the county commissioners, the fire team, the fire departments, and kind of all the different players here to make sure that we get the opportunity for those homeowners to get back in, you know, whether it's for the starting the grieving process. You know, all those people were notified the other day at that meeting, whether their home survived or not. But, you know, a lot of them, they need that picture for their insurance process to start that claim. So that's another big part of that, too, is getting that ball rolling for them. And then, you know, just trying to get back in, see if there's anything that people can salvage, or, you know, the stuff that didn't burn was to secure, or possibly, you know, some people may need to move stuff around depending on hazard trees and stuff like that and nearby. So this is, you know, a great opportunity for those people to get in and do what they need to do in a safe and controlled manner.
Now, we've talked about the 109 homes. Are there areas in the midst of all of that where there are buildings that did survive, or was everything pretty much taken out?
Yeah, it kind of depends on where you were at. You know, when you get up in places like Rock Creek, it pretty much wiped everything out in those areas. You know, some of the side streets, it was somewhat hit and miss. The highway, you know, you'll find a couple of scattered buildings here and there. But, you know, when that fire really took off and started cranking, it did some bad things. And, you know, 109 homes is the result of that. And that's just the homes. That doesn't count the outbuildings and the garages and those kinds of structures as well. So the devastation out there is pretty large.
Well, and obviously that impacts hundreds of people that are going to, you know, have a very lengthy process to figure out what they do next. Because even if you go through insurance fairly quickly and talk about rebuilding, there's a whole bunch of infrastructure that's going to have to be at least looked at and likely have some work done, if not massive work done to it, before anybody could even think about building again.
Yeah, you know, the power company has been back in. They've started doing stuff, but the utilities, the rest of the utilities for like phone and stuff like that, haven't even been back out there to start work yet. You know, when you look back at like places like Paradise and stuff like that, you know, some of the big problems that they ran into were, you know, like homes that were on city water and stuff like that, and the contamination that got into those lines. So, you know, this is an area that doesn't have those services, so that'll be one thing they won't have to worry about. But you're still going to have to do all the cleanup out there, you know, remove that debris. You know, there's going to be vegetation removal that's going to have to happen around those home sites with hazard trees and stuff like that before people can really get back in there and really start the rebuilding process. So there's a lot of work for those people going forward still.
You were down in Paradise during that. Talk about what you've seen compared to what you saw in Paradise.
Well, so, you know, Paradise was essentially a town the size of Roseburg that went up in flames very quickly. You know, we were fortunate that we didn't lose an entire town. You know, there were a couple dicey moments there where we thought the fire was going to get down into Glide and would have been a very bad situation there. And we were fortunate that it didn't. But when you get up and around, you know, I was driving around yesterday a little bit looking at some of the sites that burned, and it was flashbacks to pretty much the same stuff we saw down at the campfire, where, you know, the same kind of things are recognizable. You know, you could see, you know, the frame from the washer and the dryer, and if they had a gun safe that was in there, and pretty much everything else is just rubble at this point, though. There's not a lot of stuff that's left in those sites that you can even recognize. So in that sense of things, it was very, very similar to Paradise. Probably the difference, the biggest difference is just, you know, obviously the sheer number of homes down that were lost down there, but how tightly compressed those homes were in comparison to other homes, because it was, you know, a lot of that was within incorporated cities.
Right. And when we contrast this with, for instance, the Phoenix area, where I think it's 600 homes there, you've got sort of subdivisions, if you will, and more like what you are talking about there in Paradise.
Yeah, I haven't even had a chance to look at a lot of that yet. I've heard, you know, little snippets here and there on the news about some of that stuff. But we've been so focused up here, I've really lost track of what's been going on in other places around the state, unfortunately. But I would imagine with the little snippets I've heard, is it's going to look very similar to what some of those areas in Paradise looked like down there in that to the south of us.
And 30 seconds left. What's lying ahead for work on the fire?
Well, so going forward, you know, there's still a lot of work to do to suppress the fire. We've got crews engaged constructing line. We've got crews that are working to look for those areas to stop it. And there's a lot of work out there that's still going on.
Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
1257 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.